scratches. The dwarf's shield, too, showed bloodstains, and the blood found around the side of the dwarf's armor was his own, they realized, as they settled him down on a cot and tried to make him comfortable, lifting his mail shirt to reveal the jagged wound of a yeti claw. Another patron fetched some water, and Darby started to clean the wound, and to the surprise of all, the dwarf sat up and shook his hairy head. "Bah!" he snorted. "But I need to be going. Can I beg of ye some food?"
"Going?" Darby echoed incredulously.
"You're near dead, fool! Lay back!"
He pushed the dwarf's shoulder gently, forcing him to lie down.
"He's to need healing," noted a woman from the side. "Is Delly about Bremen, then?"
Others shrugged and looked around, having no answers.
"Ain't seen her," said one. "Go and ask," Darby bade them. "See if any have seen Delly Curty, for this one could use a bit of her warmth, to be sure."
Somewhere nearby, and yet far away, the dazed Brunner heard the name Delly Curty, and it registered in the back of his mind, where it flitted around for a few moments. The dwarf's eyes popped open wide, and he pushed back against Darby's restraint.
"Who'd ye say?"
he demanded of the innkeeper.
"Lie back!"
Darby insisted.
"Who?"
Brunner shot right back at him.
"Who?"
Darby asked right back, looking confused.
"Delly Curty, ye said."
"Aye," said Darby.
"A witch, but a good one," said the woman.
"Tell me,"
Brunner insisted.
"What she look like?"
Darby, the woman, and some other patrons exchanged curious looks. Darby turned back to Brunner and began describing to him this woman they knew as Delly Curty. Delly Curty, the name of Wolfgar's wife in a previous life, and a name the dwarf realized Catty Bree might well use as an alias. If he was Bonigo Battleaxe, then she could well be Delly Curty. And as Darby described the auburn-haired witch in the white gown and the black shawl, Brunner's smile widened with every word, and he nodded knowingly. She had made it. His daughter had survived the decades and had made the journey back to Ten Towns. Catty Bree was alive and well, so they said, and he would soon hold her once more.
"You know her, then?"
Darby asked, for Brunner's expression revealed it all quite clearly.
"What's the day?"
Brunner asked.
15th of Chess?"
14th,
the woman behind Darby corrected. Brunner grabbed Darby's arm and squeezed it tight.
"Ye get me fed and give me a bit of rest, friend, and I'll pay ye when I can." "You know her?"
Darby asked. Brunner nodded.
"A friend?"
Darby asked, and the dwarf nodded again.
"More than you could e'er know,"
Brunner said, his tone wistful, a tear streaming from his eye. He lay back then, and let himself fall into the embrace of hopeful dreams. Chapter 29. Brunner's Climb. The year of the awakened sleepers, 1484 DR, Icewind Dale. The sun rode low in the eastern sky, the first rays of daylight reaching across Icewind Dale to tickle the icy ridges of the peaks of Kelvin's Cairn. Regis paused at his cottage door, admiring those crystalline outlines.
"Marking Brunner's climb with a light of hope,"
Catty Bree remarked when she came up beside him. The halfling nodded, hoping her observation was prophetic. The pair solemnly started out from the small cottage near the lake. Bolstered by Catty Bree's protection spells, armed with potions Regis had brewed, and their step lightened by the much better weather that had settled over Ten Towns in the past couple of days, the duo made good time in their westward trek. They spoke little, however, for each settled within personal fears on this most important of nights, the spring equinox of 1484. For Catty Bree, this, her birthday, was the promise. The possible fruition of the hopes Mialiki had offered in the magical forest of Iruladun. She was a priestess of Mialiki, indeed chosen of the goddess, and so she went forth with her expectations high, but with her eyes opened wide. She knew the possibilities, all of them, And from all that she had seen, along with her understanding of Mialiki's offering of a chance and nothing more, those many potential outcomes appeared far more dire than promising. But she had to go. For Regis, this was the intersection, the great crossroads of his second life. Here he would repay the debt to Mialiki, and here he would know again, so he hoped, the greatest friends with whom he had ever shared a road. But now there were others he knew, and alternate roads that beckoned. The grinning ponies traveled the trade way, and Donala led Murata Topolino far to the east, and either organization would welcome him back with open arms. He had not forgotten his oldest friends, of course, but Regis had hedged his bets, or at least circumstances had given him the opportunity to do so. The fall of darkness beat the duo to the base of Kelvin's cairn. There they paused and looked up the familiar trails from a life lived long ago. Catti Bree had climbed the mountain the previous summer, just to ensure that Brunner's climb was still accessible. But she had only gone up once, and only briefly, and never to the top. She hadn't been able to bring herself to do that, reserving the final ascent for this very night. She reached over and took Regis by the hand, giving it a little squeeze.
"So we go," the woman said. "To see if our hopes are realized," Regis replied. "And if not?"
Catti Bree squeezed his hand tighter and looked down at him, her plaintive expression stealing the words from him. Now that Regis had known love, he understood so much better now what Catti Bree had shared with Drizzt. As frightened as he was, he knew this dear woman beside him had so much more to lose. Regis squeezed her hand back and led the way up the side of the mountain, to that special place called Brunner's Climb, the lower northern peak, a bare rock that seemed lifted into the bosom of the nighttime sky, nestled among the stars themselves. Eagerness flooded through Brunner when the torchlight came into view, and he moved toward it with all the speed he could muster, hoping, expecting to see Catti Bree, and perhaps even Drizzt and Regis beside her. Who else would be out on the side of Kelvin's cairn in the dark of night, this early in the season, after all? His hopes were dashed when he spotted the group, and he slowed his step and moved in more stealthily, unsure of the scene and of this unlikely trio in the clearing before him.
"He's a ranger, then, and with no small skill," he heard in a dwarvish voice, and a female one at that.